Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Hope everyone is safe at their places of residence or wherever you're at right now. Thank you for tuning in to Locker Talk with host Barry Bonds on the Best News Radio Network, where you'll hear about NFL stars of tomorrow today. I'm your host, Barry Bonds, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. And you guys can always reach out to me directly at any one of my social handles on Twitter at Locker_Report. Facebook, LockReport.com. Also, check out the Locker Talk podcast. That's on Facebook. On Instagram, LockReport100, all small caps. Or you simply shoot me an email at BarryBonds@Locker-Report.com. Well, folks, we saw it coming, so to speak. You know, with the coronavirus, how it was started off in China. Well, reported from China and in other parts outside the United States, and then it crept here to our proud country of the United States and started to recognize that there was lives being affected, although there were, you know, deaths, people that had been passing away. It may was small in number, but it still affected many of people because families are involved. And when it got to the point where it started to really consume the nation, as the topic of the coronavirus was, you know, something that's been heavily talked about throughout the country on all the news circuits, online, everywhere you get your news, that's when you would hear about it. And then it comes to the sports world. Now, when it gets to the sports world, normally you don't have a lot of the politics and things like that going on in sports on your sports networks, because sports is just reporting on sports, which is great. You know, even when it comes down to, you know, politics, you know, everything secluded with sports. If it's the NBA, it's the NBA. If it's ESPN, they talk about the world of sports. And my favorite station, NFL Network, everything regarding the NFL football. But when you started to see the conversation creeping in, that's when it really hit, saying that, hey, it was already serious anyway. But to see how it would affect, you know, our culture, affect everything, when it got to the point of shutting down schools, shutting down states, that's when we knew that, okay, there's going to be a lot of changes. A lot of vacations going to be put on hold or canceled. And then, no surprising to find out yesterday, pretty much like in the afternoon, that my favorite coverage, the main thing that I deal with in terms of the NFL Regional Combine, something that has always been built up at least a year prior to the actual event on the field, was canceled yesterday due to the coronavirus. And you know, my first initial reaction was like, man, you know, I'm not gonna lie to you, very disappointed, definitely hurt, not only because of a couple of reasons. Because number one, players really hard during the course of a couple of years there. When, if you just get, you know, put yourself in this, in the shoes of players that came from small schools, players that were pretty much overlooked for the most of their playing career, they sit back and they would say to themselves, knowing about the NFL Regional Combine, and to know that they're not going to get the same type of coverage or the same type of visibility, or the same, most importantly, the same type of opportunity that your powerhouse schools will automatically get. These players put everything into saying to themselves that if they can get to the regional combine, I will have a chance. All I have to do is get in front of the right NFL decision makers, and boom, my career will take off. And that's the mindset of players from small schools as they look to the NFL Regional Combine every year. Now, those that pocket of players that was looking forward to this workout, unfortunately, they won't have that workout because of what's going on with this national crisis with the coronavirus, and which is understood and understand because you don't want to take a chance until they get, until I would say the situation is under control, that is handled properly, having the right treatments laid out where everyone can be accessibility to, and until they find an answer, they don't want to jeopardize people's lives and their families' lives for having something like this that's going on. And so for those players, you know, I feel really bad for them. This year was the, as we know, the first annual HBCU Combine, which is something that the league has been, NFL Football Operations, has been putting together for the past couple of years, just waiting for the right opportunity to have the right support, to make sure that, you know, all the clubs were on board with it and moving forward to the HBCU workouts. Everyone that was involved was excited about it, including the teams, something that they were all looking forward to. They tried to change the narrative that our kids from the historically black colleges and university can play in this league, and not just by a low number, that although last year there were 32 players from the HBCU ranking community in the NFL, out of over 1,600 people, we know that's a bad number. We know that there are more players from the HBCU level that can play in the league. You know, how many more? A lot more than 32, but still not an overwhelming case of players because, like I said, it's with the scouts, with the NFL personnel, have they missed players? Have players been overlooked? Could they have done a lot better? Yes, they could. But on the flip side of that, they can't get to everybody. And so knowing that they can't get to everyone, they try to stick to the schools that they know that the talent is going to be there. And we see year in and year out that the product on the field, on the NFL field, is still by far the best in the world in terms of this game. So these guys were not missing. These scouts, these evaluators, personnel, GMs, they were not missing on it because they kept a good product on the field. But it's always in the back of their minds that there was someone, a couple of players here and there that they've made that they may have forgotten or had overlooked or did not know about. With the NFL Football Operations, with them setting and establishing this process of the international for the NFL Regional Combine process, it helped brought closure to players and also brought closure to NFL decision makers, knowing that, hey, we may did not get to every person, but we was able to see the best that was out there, and the NFL Regional Combine process helped solidify that. And to know that another year will have to wait for those players for the HBCU rankings. Now, the positive side of all of this is that, especially in terms of the HBCU community, the majority of the public did not know about the HBCU having their own combine. So this was something that was new. Really wasn't It was not something that was prepared for. It was pretty much business as usual. Finish out school, get your good grades, finish strong, get your degree, play well in the field, cross your fingers, hopefully somebody recognizes me so I can get a chance to at least get a workout and get in front of some scouts so that they can further their dream on the playing field. Business as usual. But when the NFL had dropped the HBCU combine, for those who known about it, including myself, was pumped up, was fired up, was ready to get down, was ready to, you know, to really change the narrative and really filter into those places to really drain that rag, and make sure we filter out every last possibility of talent that is out there. Now, with that being said, going forward into next year, knowing that the league has an NFL regional combine workout established, and unfortunately we won't have it this year, but they're going to see the players, you're going to see the coaches, hopefully, you see the administrators, hopefully, you're going to see all these guys from the HBCU community in regards to football, want to take it up a notch in their play to recognize that, hey, you know what? I had that opportunity to go to Mississippi State, but it fell through. I had that opportunity to play in Alabama, but that fell through. I had that opportunity to play at LSU, but it didn't go through. I had to wind up going to Mississippi Valley State, or I had to go to Howard or Morehouse. Football, okay, it didn't work out for me to go to that big school. But now, since there's an HBCU combine predicated to me, and I'm going to speak in third person as a player saying there's a workout dedicated to me, oh, it's on now. So they're going to have these players working hard, watching out for their nutrition, saying no to a lot of things that could hinder their opportunity to get to the NFL. And these guys are going to watch out what they put on their social handles. And for the record, for all the players that are normally evaluate before the workouts, long before the decisions are made, for the most part, I do have to commend these kids. They really keep their social media channels really clean. So I have not seen anyone's social page that had a lot of nonsense on there or stuff that was inappropriate. So I commend young men out there that's really working to keep your profiles clean on the social medias. And that helps out tremendously because, trust me, that is thoroughly looked at like with a fine-tooth comb. So I do have to take a little pause and mention that. But they're going to see these guys play hard. They're going to see them take it more serious. They're going to be more dedicated because they know they have something that's set for them and only for them. And these guys are going to shoot out and come out next year on that field knowing that they made their chances of their dream to play in the NFL is definitely there. Now, like I said earlier and said several times before, it's not like it's going to be an abundance. Okay, it will not be an abundance of players from the HBCU rankings that will just flood the gates. It's not going to be a lot, but it's going to be a whole lot more than just averaging about 30 players from the HBCU community in the NFL. You listen to Locker Talk on the Bachelor News Radio Network where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow or today. You guys can always reach out to me directly on any one of my social handles, on Twitter, Locker_Report, on Facebook, LockerReport.com, also Locker Talk Podcast, on Instagram, LockerReport100, all small caps, or you guys can simply shoot me an email via BarryBonds@locker-report.com. Now, on to the regional combine itself is invitational. Those players that were invited, there's a positive with those guys as well. And I'll talk a little bit about that after I come back from, you know, a short pause. We're going to talk about that. Also, I will talk about some of the players. Now, although they will not be a workout for the HBCU combine this year, but it's not going to stop Locker Report. We're reporting on these kids. The best part about this is that I have their names. I have their track records. I have their skill set. Everything is all mapped out. And you guys can always go to locker-report.com and check out who were the players that were invited to this year's HBCU combine. Check those players out. Some great stuff, some great schools. I'm going to break it down. Talk about some of these players. If I don't get to all the players, hey, I'll talk about them next year. As far as on this end, it's going to feel as if that there was an HBCU combine because I will follow these guys for their careers. I will monitor what these guys are going to do trying to get into the NFL because a lot of these guys still have pro days. A lot of these guys still have their eyes looked. They said still were looked at. And I'm going to highlight these guys, talk about these guys, come back after this quick pause and listen to Locker Talk on the Bachelor News.
Hey, this is LA Bachelor reminding you, if you're looking for real discussion on sports, politics, religion, and other topics, you need to join us on Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern at WCOMFM.org, on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. at blogtalkradio.com/LA-Bachelor, and on Thursdays at the same web address. Follow us on Facebook at Pad Nation, on Twitter, Pad Nation, the number 2, at Twitter, LinkedIn, and you can email us with your requests, your comments, your concerns, anything you want at our email address at LABachelor40@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Pad Nation, Instagram, and of course, if you miss any part of our broadcast, make sure you go to thebachelorpadnetwork.com and listen and enjoy the Bachelor Pad.
Hello, welcome back to Lock and Talk on the Bachelor News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL stars of tomorrow, today. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. And you guys can always reach out to me at any one of my social handles on Twitter at Locker_Report, on Instagram, Locker Report 100, all large caps, all small caps, my fault, and on Facebook at LockReport.com and the Locker Talk podcast. Make sure you guys click like and follow everything that's coming from this show and then some articles that I put on my publication at Locker-Report.com. Or you guys can simply shoot me email directly at BarryBarnes@Locker-Report.com. All right. Now, just talked about the coronavirus and, you know, how it's affecting the nation, how it's affecting everything in regards to our culture here in the United States. We definitely want to give our condolences to the families that suffered, family members who lost their lives to this tragic incident. We definitely want to extend that to all those families there. If you're listening under the sound of my voice, I'll definitely have you and your families in our thoughts and our prayers, and hopefully that everything will be taken care of and everyone at the same time will continue to grow together and keep everything in a positive notion, because it's not going to always be like this. I really believe in our system. I believe in our government. I believe in, you know, the doctors that we have here. I believe that these guys have been trained for this. It was just one of those situations where in every situation, you know, it was caught off guard, and it's okay because we're going to bounce back like we always do, and I have total confidence in that. Now, with that being said, knowing that the effects that it caused, it, you know, pretty much shut down a lot in this country, and it affected the sports world with the NBA pausing that season, NHL, and the NCAA tournament, everything on hold, and then it trickled down to the regional combine platform, where it was announced on Thursday that the HBCU combine and the NFL regional combine invitational was canceled, along with the owners meetings, how that was canceled due to the effect of the coronavirus. Now, with the NFL owners meetings, they're going to eventually have that. How they're going to have it set up, we don't know. Normally, when they have the meetings, where it also would affect something that is predicated to what I cover in regards to the NFL officials, that normally with the meetings they have in March, that's when the competition committee have their meetings as well. And that's where they would make their proposals to some changes in the NFL as far as rules-wise. And then when they would have their meeting in May, that's when everything is pretty much locked in, what they're going to do, and then they move forward, especially in terms of the new rules and changes. So that's what one of the topics that they have in the owners meetings. They will eventually have that, but unfortunately, they will not have the workouts for the HBCU and the NFL regional combine invitational. Just got word directly from the front office about that. However, although there will not be a workout Locke Report is going to cover this thing as if that as if it was a workout, meaning that, hey, guys, I have the names of the players from the HBCU. I want to follow these guys, want to track these guys. Most of these guys still had pro days, and I believe that these guys are going to be successful. The way how I will word it is something that I'm going to definitely figure out, but because they were on the list, for me, they're part of the NFL Regional Combine family, and I'm going to track them. And like I said, that the positive, although I talked about the sad part in the first half of the show, but the positive is that the players from the HBCU community have something to look for, and they have something that's predicated and laid out for them down the road going into next year. And the best part is that I have their names. And I'm really excited about talking about the players that were invited to this year's workout. Now, as far as with a breakdown, there were about 50 players that were invited this year to this year's HBCU Combine. The MEAC conference led the list of invitees in the HBCU Combine with 17, and the SWAC had 14 players. Now, as far as schools concerned, Tennessee State had 5 players that were coming from that was going to attend the HBCU Combine. Now, North Carolina A&T, Southern, Prairie View, Morgan State University, and Norfolk State, each of them had 3 players from their programs that were going that were invited to the HBCU Combine. So that was something that was really strong. As far as Alcorn State, they had 2 players. Arkansas and Pine Bluff had 2 players. Florida A&M had 2 players. Hampton, 2 players. Shaw had 2 players. And South Carolina State themselves had 2 players that was going to represent them. As far as with other schools that were there, we had 19 other schools that were represented by at least 1 player. So you had Alabama A&M, Alabama State, Bethune Cookman, Bowie State, Chauwin, the school son go to, Delaware State, Grambling, Howard, Jackson State, Langston, Lincoln, Morehouse, North Carolina Central, Savannah State, St. Augustine, Virginia State, Virginia Union, Winston-Salem, and Benedict. So they were the schools that had at least 1 player that was going to be at whoever's going to be at the HBCU Combine. And the cool part was at Langston, that is a school that's a part of the NAIA. So they had a representative, and that the NAIA is more than a conference, but it's an association that's actually under the NCAA. Let me take that back. I ain't gonna say under. They pretty much on the same level as the NCAA Division II level. Before the NCAA, it was the NAIA. They were the big boys on the block. But the NCAA is now the shiny star. The NAIA is more of, I would say, more of a faith-based association of schools. But their talent level is on par with Division II for the NCAA. And some of those schools actually had leaped from the NAIA to get to the branch or under umbrella of the NCAA. Now, just because you have a player that went to an NAIA school does not mean they cannot play on the same level of the players from the NCAA. Because going to that association is more of a choice than anything. So that's the part that said that they're not under, they're still on the same par, but when you look at the equivalency of their skill set, it equals the NCAA Division II level. So we did get 1 player from that association in the HBCU confines. And the thing is that with the AIA, each year they growing. They bringing in more schools to be under their association. Right now, if memory serves me, that there are exactly 251 institutions that's within that association. So that's definitely moving into the right direction. So with that being said, the players from the that was going to be invited to the HBCU workouts this year definitely was going to be strong, especially the running back core. And speaking of the running backs, I guess I'll take my chance and I'll just start working with the offensive players that was going to be invited, that were invited to the workouts this year. And this year was very unique. I was really looking forward and seeing some of the quarterbacks that was there. There were going to be three quarterbacks that were invited to this year's workouts that I believe that they would have had a definite opportunity to really get to the level. And I still believe that at least a couple of them will still get a shot, especially DeAndre Francois. Francois was actually Florida State's quarterback a couple of years ago. We know about his freshman performance at Florida State, where he was the freshman of the year, made the freshman all, you know, first team with the ACC. So he had a fantastic year, and everyone was thinking, including myself, that, hey, this kid is going to pick up from where Jameis Winston went, I mean, had left off, and bring another title back to Tallahassee. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. He had some allegations as far as with domestic situations, and he wound up having to leave Florida State, try to get into Florida International. That didn't work out, so he wound up going to Hampton this year and actually had a good season. One of the things about Francois, he's definitely a play-action quarterback, very strong, accurate on the run, has a good touch, quick feet, mobile, athletic, reads defenses a lot better than he did when he was in Florida State. I don't know if it had something to do with the level of play, but he read defense a lot better this year. He go through his progressions, something that he recognized that – something that he actually did pretty good when he was at Florida State, and he got better at it. So he go through all his progressions. He's hard to bring down. He have a good pocket presence, smart, and most important, he can make all the NFL throws, very savvy, and he's very talented for the quarterback position. Ryan Stanley, Florida A&M, 6'3", 210 pounds, a pro-style quarterback that can manipulate the pocket very well. I really like the way how he was able to do things on the field at that school and really set things apart. Well, one of the things that we don't necessarily always see at HBCU school is a white player, but a quarterback stepping in, doing a fantastic job for that program. You know, it's great, you know, to see. And he actually embraced the HBCU culture, and he just kicked butt while he was on the field. He manipulates the pocket very well. Like I said, he has good feet, solid mechanics. His balls are not flat. He has zip on his passes. He delivered the ball well on the run, especially running to his right side. He has solid pocket presence, reads through his progressions, keep the ball high and tight, deliver the ball quickly with a quick release, good touch over the middle, accurate down the field, and he is a pure leader. And then when we go to Jalen Morton, quarterback from Prairie View, 6'4", 226 pounds, not the fastest quarterback out there we've ever seen, but he throws the deep ball well with accuracy. He can extend plays well in the pocket, have velocity on his balls, look to pass first, although he's mobile, but he will run if he needs. Very strong. He commands the huddle. He have a decent touch, and from sideline to sideline, he can get the ball to the sideline quick, and he's very elusive. So that's the quarterbacks that were invited to the HBCU combine for this year. Next week, I'll talk about the rest of the offensive skill players, then start featuring talking about the defensive players. Like I said, it may have not been a workout physically, but I want to talk about these guys as if they had the workout of their lives. You listen to Lock and Talk on the Bassin News Radio Network, where you hear about NFL starts of tomorrow today. I'm your proud host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. You guys can always reach out to me directly on Twitter at Locker_Report. On Facebook, LockReport.com and Locker Report Podcast. On Instagram, LockReport100, all small caps. So you guys can shoot me an email directly at Barry Barnes at Locker dashreport.com. Everyone, stay safe. Take care of yourselves. Wash your hands. And make sure you be there for all your loved ones. Everyone, stay blessed. Have a good week. Come back next week, and we'll still talk about these gems that will get that shot in the NFL some way, somehow. Everyone, have a good one. Bye.
I'm here with Donald Sly Green as we continue our conversation about his story, and we're talking about the trial and how the trial began to take shape. Sly, this was said to be the biggest case in Western New York history. Do you feel that you were just being tried in the media, that there was just too much hype for you to win or get a proper defense?
I feel that not only was it too much hype, but that the government influenced the witnesses to lie. The witnesses was willing to say and do anything in order to get themselves off. They was co-defendants on the case. Some of them I had never seen or met before. And the government are threatening to take your kids away from you. The government will tell you what to say, tell you how to say it, you know. Practice it with you so that you'll be able to say it in a way to convince the jury that you're telling the truth. It may have been the biggest trial in the history of the city or in the Western District of New York to them, but it was the biggest hype to me because the things that went on in that trial was unbelievable.
Mm.
And the government, they'll do anything, Pat, to win a case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what it is. They'll threaten to take your kids away from you. They'll threaten to put you in jail for long periods of time. You know, like the government, they sent word to one of the lawyers to inform me that, well, inform Mr. Green that if he come over on our side, we'll make him a star. I said, I don't want to be a star in the way that you're talking about making me a star. I have no intentions on testifying against anybody to get myself out of anything or making life harder for somebody else just because I want to get out of the situation that I'm unfortunately in at the time that I was in it. I said, I'm going to trial. And I told the lawyers on the case, I don't want the lawyers to bring me that type of information again from the U.S. attorneys telling me that they could do this. I didn't want to hear it, you know? So I proceeded right to trial. In other words, no matter how big the trial was, no matter what was going to happen, I was going to stand up to the very end. And I was not going to sacrifice anybody or put anybody under the bus or lie and fabricate anything against anybody. I was not going to do that on the state case when I went to trial, and I definitely was not going to do that on the federal case when I went to trial because that's not how I was raised in the streets, you know?
Let me ask you this. While all of this was going on around you, how were you feeling knowing what you were up against? What were your thoughts? I mean, were you thinking in regards to yourself? But I know most importantly, your family. What were you thinking?
Okay, well, I had just got 25 to life for the state of New York. Now, as I'm going through the trial and I get convicted, I'm thinking like, well, yo, I just got convicted. They getting ready to sentence me. They sentenced me to 4 life terms and 110 years. That's 5 life terms and 135 years running wild, running crazy. And what's running through my mind is that I'm saying to myself that it's over with for me. you know, I might as well commit suicide or something like that. This is what I'm saying to myself, but I know I'm not going to commit suicide. I know I'm just going to stand up, learn much as I can about the law, try to learn much as I can about the law to try to get myself out of the situation. At the time, I got two little boys and a daughter. And, you know, I'm thinking like, damn, I can't be there for them now. You know, now I could have put myself in a situation whereas if I wanted to lie and fabricate like the witnesses done against me to be with them, but I just couldn't see myself doing that, Pat. You know, their mothers was just going to have to raise them, and I was just going to have to see them in the way that I done seen them over the years. You know, if I had to try to become a rat or a snitch or something like that, that I was not going to become.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's running through my mind like I got these three little babies, and, man, it's hurting. It's killing me, man. But I know I got to stand to the end, man. I got to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and their mothers, you know, they looking at me. They not telling me to roll over or do this or do that because I'm not going to do it anyway. Then I got my mother. My mother is worrying. My family is worrying, you know, my brothers and all of them. You know, but my main objective, Pat, I got to be honest with you, man. My main objective is I'm going all the way through. I'm not capping out. I'm not asking for mercy or none of that. I'm just going to stand up all the way through the whole thing. And now those are the type of things that's running through my mind. And another thing that's running through my mind is that I'll never, ever see the streets again.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that's running through my mind is that I'm all in. They done took me down with lies. They done took me down with, you know, with paid testimony. You know, they lining up to testify to get themselves off a situation. But I know I'm up against all this, Pat, and I see all this, but I'm still going to stand to the very end because that's how I was bred from the streets, man. That's how I came up. I'm standing up to the end. Now, somebody would say that, yo, this guy's crazy. This guy's a fool. To them, I may be that. But to me, I was being the man that I am because that's just how I was raised in life, man, to stand up on my own and don't blame nothing on nobody else. Don't take my burden, my situation, and put it on somebody else. That's how I seen it, Pat.
All right. Sly, how many co-defendants were there in total?
I had 32 co-defendants on the case, and nine of them testified. Nine testified, and some of them went in, like I said, some of them went into the Federal Witness Protection Program. But the whole thing of the case was to take me down. They didn't care how they took me down, Pat. They didn't care whether they lied. They didn't care what they had to do. This is the federal government. They'll arrest your grandmother. They'll arrest your mother. They'll arrest your sisters and brothers. They'll take the babies and put them in foster care. If they want you bad enough, they'll do anything within their power to take you down. They don't care if you're innocent or not, Pat. That's what they'll do. This is the federal government, man. And this is what they done to me. They've done any and everything they can to take me down. They didn't care if I was innocent of most of those charges or not. We're taking this guy, Sly Green, down. And that's what they done, man. And I'm saying to myself, you take me down, I'm standing up to the very end. And that's how I had. That's how I seen it, Pat.
Sly, let me ask you this. You told me you're writing a book.
Yes.
What is the goal of your book, and when do we look to see when it comes out?
The book should be out this year, probably around September or October of this year, and the name of the book is called Diaries of a Jailhouse Lawyer, Volume 1. There's a Volume 1, there's a Volume 2, and there's a Volume 3. And the book is based on me coming into the federal to state prison system with five life terms and 135 years, and not sitting around in the prisons watching TV, not sitting around in the prisons playing basketball or playing cards, but coming into the system, going straight to the law library, and trying to untangle this five life terms and 135 years. And inside the book, it tells the younger guys and the youth, you don't want to be like Sly Green. Because Sly Green was serving five life terms and 135 years. So You don't want to grow up admiring, emulating, being like this guy that they talk about, Sly Green. Because Sly Green don't want to be the type of guy that they labeled him as being. And Sly Green is not that type of guy that they labeled him as being. And Sly Green is not trying to be in prison for 5 life terms and 135 years. So for all the younger guys, the book tells you, when you go to trial, you stand up at trial. When you come to federal state prisons, now you got to stand up against inmates. Okay, you stood up in the public, now you got to come here and stand up. Now you got to fight your way through these guys. Now you got to show these guys that you're not soft. Now you got to go through a whole different type of initiation in order for you to survive in these type of prisons. So you don't want to be like Sly Green, because if you be like Sly Green, then the feds in the state will do the same thing to you that they done to Sly Green.
Mm.
So the best thing I would say for the youth in the book, as I say, is that, you know, turn the page to a different life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to school, educate yourself, do something constructive for yourself. And if you can stay out the streets, stay out the streets. But don't come up trying to emulate a guy like Sly Green, because that guy is dead and gone.
Mm.
You know, you don't want to be like Sly Green. Now, if I had it to do all over again, I would go to law school and become a lawyer.
Right.
Even though I have 2 degrees now.
Mm-hmm.
But I would go to law school and become a lawyer, because when I came in here, I went straight to the law library. Now I know the law. Now I know how to write the law. I know how to dictate the law. I know how to do motions. I know how to file all kind of things. I know how to help people get out of jail. So I've grown from being in this here type of prison environment. I've grown from this prison experience. And I'm in here around judges. They got a judge every here and there come to prison. They got lawyers come to prison. They got doctors come to prison. They got murders. They got crime bosses. They got kingpins that come to prison. And they got some guys that commit certain type of crimes that if they commit rapes or they hurt old people or something, they can't come in these prison populations because they're not accepted.
Right.
You know? But my point is, you don't want to be like Sly Green. That's for the public. Don't try to be like Sly Green, because if you try to be like Sly Green, then you're going to end up in the same situation that Sly Green is in, and you're going to be fighting for the rest of your life for your freedom, and you may die in prison. Just like Sly Green may die in prison if he don't get his last life off of him. If Sly Green don't get this last life off of him, he'll die in prison trying to get out of prison.
Mm.
And that's what the book is about. The book is about all the cases, a lot of the cases that I won, about the experiences that I went through in high security Colorado, which is Florence, Colorado,
mm-hmm.
the experiences that I went through in Lewisburg, United States Penitentiary, Atlanta Federal Penitentiary, Leavenworth Federal United States Penitentiary. And when I say they was penitentiaries, Pat, I mean exactly that. When I came to Leavenworth, it looked just like the White House. It looked so dangerous and vicious, I was scared to death, man.
Mm.
I said, damn, what have I got myself into? When I seen this penitentiary, because I had never seen a penitentiary like this. And then when I got inside the penitentiary, it looked like the morgue, like some people done died in the basement of the penitentiary. And so I'm even more afraid. I'm shivering now.
Mm.
And I'm like, damn, what is this? Then when I get upstairs and I get into the areas, they got 80 cells long. The cells is 80 cells long. You can't even see at the end of the cells.
Mm.
So I'm like, damn. And then all of a sudden when I go to the mess hall is so big, it looked like the United Nations. You got Indians there. You got blacks there. You got whites there. You got Mexicans there. You got all the different gangs throughout the United States in this one penitentiary. You got like 34 different gangs there. You got crime bosses there. You got gangsters. You got killers. You got murder. You got a whole lot of Sly Greens in there.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? So don't look at Sly Green like he's some tough guy or he was some crime boss. That's not the case. Because I was none of that, and they got somebody for Sly Green as well, right in them prisons along with Sly Green.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got many Sly Greens in them prisons that's never coming out of them prisons.
Have any of these groups tried to recruit you based on the hyped reputation of Sly
Green?
Yeah,
you know, yeah, they talk to me and stuff like that, but I don't pay them no attention when it comes to that. A lot of them done said things to me, and, you know, I could have been a shot caller, OG shot caller, triple OG, because that's what they use and all that. But I don't get involved in things like that, Pat. Every day that I've been in prison, I've been in that law library. I go outside, I do 2 hours of physical workout, I come back and I spend the rest of my time in the law library. Whenever the prison get locked down for any type of disciplinary actions, I go straight to the law books in my cell. My whole objective is to one day be free.
As you well know, just from the hype that you experienced on how they tried to build a personality around you, that same personality was being permeated before you left in the hip-hop world of this gangster type image that a lot of our young people are beginning to follow, that type of image in the street. What would be your message to them outside of continuing on what you've already said?
My message would be to them is don't go for the hype. Don't get involved with situations that might cause you to become incarcerated, especially in prison, because that's all it is hype. Don't try to be like Sly Green. Don't make songs and lyrics and everything about Sly Green, because that guy is only an image that the federal government built up in order for them to win a trial. That's not me. The image that they built up as Sly Green, being a gangster type of guy, a boss, crime boss, that guy is not me. Sly Green is a guy that's in prison right now, suffering every day, trying to get himself out of prison. Sly Green is a guy that's looking towards the future for a better life if he can ever get out of prison. I don't see myself as being the type of guy that they should make lyrics about. I don't see myself as being the type of guy that's a gangster or anything like that, because I'm none of that. It's just the image that the government built up. It's a fake image. It's an image that they portrayed. It's an image that they projected upon me in order to win a trial. And the things that's been said about me as being, you know, this crime boss, this gangster, this real fly and serious guy, that's not me. I just want to be very honest with you. That's not me. That's just something that was built up by the government to take me down. And no matter who you are, if the government come for you and they want to take you down, they don't care. They're going to take you down by any means necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, they don't care if they got to get your mother, your grandmother, if they got to take your kids from you, if they got to charge you with being a super kingpin, a racketeering boss, if they got to charge you with criminal enterprise, if they got to give you 4 conspiracies and 1 conspiracy and make you look bigger than life, like they done made Sly Green look bigger than life. But see, I'm not impressed with the hype. And I ask that the young kids not be impressed with the hype. I ask that the young kids not try to idolize me or emulate me, because that's not me. The image that was built up about me, that's not me. That's just something that was built up in order for the government to win a trial. I'm not that type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a guy in the law library every day trying to get my freedom. I'm a guy that's doing a life sentence and may die in prison, all because of an image, all because of something that's been built up, all because of something that's been fantasized about me. And I'm saying this to you, Pat, because this is what's in the book as well, and I'm trying to tear that image down that the government done built up about me,
mm-hmm.
that the public got about me, the monster they done created me into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just not that guy.
Yeah.
You know, I got 2 degrees. I work out every day. I do exercise every day. And one more thing for the young guys. When you come to these prisons, they need to remember that when they come to these prisons, for an example, in the federal penitentiaries that I'm in, when you come to these federal penitentiaries like Lewisburg, like Leavenworth, like High Security Colorado, you come into these federal prisons with guys from all over the world, not just from the United States, guys from all over the world. You got some of the most dangerous, vicious guys in these prisons, and all they do is self-destruct. All they do is kill, murder, stab, rape, sexually abuse each other, disrespect each other. They're not trying to educate themselves. Some of them are. About 10% of them, out of 100%, 10% of them will try to educate themselves and strive to better their position in life so that upon our reentry back into society, they'll have some type of skills and, you know, they'll want to do something positive with their life. But the average one, is just talking about more crime, how to be a more of a successful criminal. And that's not what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And when you come to these prisons, there's always the possibility that you may never make it out, because a lot of guys get stabbed, a lot of guys get murdered, a lot of guys get raped, a lot of guys get killed. Certain guys can't make it in these prisons. The environments that you're being subjected to is subhuman environments. You're being controlled through the conditions of how they feel that they want to control it in these prisons. So when you think about Sly Green, you need to think about, do I want to spend the rest of my life in prison?
Mm.
Do I want to have to go to the law library every day and try to knock down five life terms in 135 years with the possibility that I may never, ever be free again? When you think about Sly Green and these guys making these rap songs, talking about Sly Green, what some of them I have heard, that's not me. I'm not that type of guy. I'm not no gangster. I'm not no crime boss. I'm just a guy that got caught up in a very unfortunate situation. And the situation got blowed up and got blowed out of hand. It's out of control. And now they done made me into this this legendary figure on the streets. And I'm none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I want the public to know that. I want the young guys that's going to school, I want y'all to know that Sly Green image is a fake. That's a fraud. That's something that the government built up to make me into.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that. I'm not going to try to live up to it.
Mm.
And if I had it my way right now, I would be out there talking to the youth, trying to explain to the guys in the little boys club, or explain it to anybody that would listen to me, that, listen, man, I'm not about selling drugs. Some I have sold, but I've redeemed myself. You know what I'm saying? I'm not
mm-hmm.
about ordering no hits or kidnappers, extortion, or being a crime boss or something like that. I'm not into that. I was never into that in the beginning. It's been blowed up to be something that it never was. And I'm not going to stay in prison. And when people come see me, yo, that's such and such, that's not. No, I'm not living up to that image. Anybody that's been in these prisons will tell you that I'm not that type of guy. I'm a gentleman. I'm respectful. You know, I'm not a murderer. I'm not a killer. I'm not this bigger than life figure. That's just something that the government used to create an image to take me down.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask that the public look at me as being the gentleman that I am. And that's what the book is about.
Mm-hmm.
The book is about that. And those young guys need to know, man, that when you come to these prisons, all they doing is stabbing, murder, and killing each other, because all the vicious and dangerous guys is being piled into the high security prisons.
Mm-hmm.
I done went through it. I know. You got 34, 35 different gangs in one prison. They having gang wars. They murdering. They killing each other.
Mm-hmm.
They disrespecting each other. You know?
Mm-hmm.
They ain't talking about, yo, I'm going to try to get a better education so that if I ever reenter into society, I'll be able to do something positive and constructive with my life.
What Sly are your degrees in, Sly?
I got 2 degrees. I got one in business and the other one in business administration. I got 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that I'm saying, Pat, is in transcripts and newspapers.
This call is from a federal prison.
And all the 166 cases and the 5 Supreme Court cases that I won, all they got to do is click on most of the U.S. district courts in the United States. I don't have a case damn near in every circuit in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in district court. So if anybody don't believe that I won 166 cases and 5 Supreme Court cases, all they got to do is plug into the court, put Donald G. Green, and put 39747019, and they'll see that I don't want 166 cases and 5 Supreme Court cases. Those guys didn't used to like you to put their name on the cases, but a few years ago, I started putting my name on my cases because I've been winning so many. And it's like a gift. I need to say this to you too, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
One day I had to get a feeling in my tooth.
Uh-huh.
And so my tooth was, the dentist filled my tooth, but my tooth got poisoned. Poison came into my bloodstream. So I hit the floor. When I hit the floor, I went out. And so I'm walking, and I got people on this side and people on the other side, because I'm walking this long, bright light. And an angel comes out of nowhere, and I can't describe how the angel looked. All I know is it was like a voice I never heard before, and it was a presence there. And as I'm walking in the straight line towards the light, it's a big, bright light at the end. And I got people hollering and screaming at me, and they below me, and they in dark, but I'm walking on this bright line, and they hollering and screaming about me, about everything I ever done in life. Yeah, it is. And I'm afraid to look down because if I look down, they're going to pull me down.
Mm-hmm.
So an angel come out of nowhere and say, don't pay him no attention. Just keep walking
right. And
keep looking straight ahead towards the light. So I keep looking straight ahead towards the light. I keep walking with the angel. Another angel come around that angel and come over to the right side. And the other angel, like, it hurry off like it was running off or something. And this angel say to me, we're not ready for you yet.
Mm.
We still have a lot left for you to do. So I know that I'm still in prison, and I know that this here is a near-death experience, and this ain't no dream or nothing like that. And so I go to walk, and I tell the angel, I said, no, I want to go because I know I'm in federal prison doing this life sentence, and I don't want to come back. So the angel said, no, we still have a lot left for you to do. So I go to step because I want to still go towards the light. And when I look down, it's like what they call that hellfire. I step back, and I come back into the life that I'm in the dentist's office, and I'm in all this pain and all this hair stuff because my bloodstream and my face done blew up so big, it's a shame. So they rushed me to the hospital, and I ain't never forget that, man. So what I'm saying to you is saying that I must have been given a gift to be able to win them cases like I'm winning them, because I can't even believe that I'd be winning them like I win them. I just got so good at it. When the ones I take, I win them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't win every one of them, Pat. Of the 166 in the 5 Supreme Courts, I only lost 5 cases since I've been doing law.
Mm.
You know, and I just feel that it's a gift. I just feel that God got better things for me to do. And that story that I just told you is a true story.
Mm-hmm.
And I put that in the book, too.
Awesome.
You know,
I like that.
The angel said, we still have a lot left for you to do. We're not ready for you yet. Now, the other angel could have been the angel of death.
That's right.
I don't know. You know?
That's right.
Those are the type of things that I've been going through.
This concludes the first part of the exclusive interview with Donald Sly Green here on a special edition of The Message. Donald Sly Green is taking an opportunity with us to tell his side of the story. Today, he talked about some major and key points, but don't miss next week. I am the Mighty Oba, Pat Freeman, here on a special edition of The Message.
Give each other new instructions on what makes us feel.